what's hate against us? We will define that. If you want to say what you want to say, go ahead and say it, but do not cross this line. This is where we decide for ourselves. Nobody decides for us.
The flag was hoisted before the world.
What does it mean to fight back?
We have a long fight ahead of us.
Here I am.
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 With Shai Davidai.
One of the things that have bugged me for probably my entire life is the fact that after the Second World War ended, after the Holocaust, there were so many Germans out there who were claiming to not have known anything, not have done anything. And historians still don't have a lot to work with because not a lot of things have been documented. And in that regard, documenting hate, documenting the people that were attacking Jews and are attacking Jews now is a form of fighting for Jewish civil rights. It's not how I fight, but it's how other people fight. And today I have the two people behind Jew Hate Database who have been doing exactly that, fighting for Jewish civil rights by calling out and naming the people that are out there to hate us and attack us. So here I am with David Ben Yosef and Ben Meir. How are you guys doing?
Pleasure to be here.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you for having us.
So I always start with the same question for everyone. And off the top of your head, I'll start, David. What kind of a Jew are you?
That's a funny question. Because I would say over the past, let's call it my adult life, I went from, when I'm asked that, my initial response would be Jewish. Yeah. Uh-huh. To now it's big Jew. Yeah, so I would say I'm a strong Jew, a Jew that honors our ancestors, a Jew that cares for our descendants, I would say.
How about you, Ben?
I would say a Jew that never backs down, very persistent on anything that I do. I'm very persistent.
Have you ever always been?
Always.
Always been.
Never give up, always hopeful, always pushing towards things. So yeah, I never back down.
And you've known each other for how long?
3 years,
yep.
Change.
3 years, but you guys work all the time
together. Yeah.
Can you say, David, what kind of a Jew has Ben?
Fearless, passionate. Oh my God, one more word. Let's find a strong.
Yeah.
I would just say.
What do you say about
David? Yeah, I mean, I could say the same about him. Very, very passionate. I mean, very, like, out there, go-getter, hustler, you know, just doesn't give up.
All right, so let's get into that passion. So, like, clearly, I've met you guys a couple of times. The first time we met, I was like, okay, these guys are onto something. These guys are passionate. So tell me about your passion. Tell me about this project that you're doing, whatever you can say about how it started. You know, what reactions have you been getting?
I'll jump in. So, you know, historically, prior to starting this, we didn't really have, at least myself personally, I wasn't really involved in the Jewish world. Started to see many problems and gaps within the way situations are being handled.
Like what? What's
So the high level thesis, so essentially, Jewish Database came out of an accelerator that Ben and I started. And the high level thesis there is that everyone is focused on what's the silver bullet. What's the one solution that's going to fix all of Am Yisrael's problems, yeah?
Uh-huh.
Our theory is that that silver bullet does not exist. It's 1,000 bullets, meaning, mm-hmm. And again, not bullets in a violent way, but strategies, right? So again, I think for Jews specifically in the West, I think we've been asleep at the wheel for the past at least 20 years, and I believe it's a combination of education, activism, security, media, and so on, right? So I think the fact that there is not an organization that has a 360 top-down view that takes into account all of those elements, I think you end up with very fragmented, you know, well-intentioned pieces to a possible solution. However, the fact that they are not tied together, the fact that there is no proper sort of central command, you know, we make this joke often that we say, I want Kanye to be right, meaning that we want the fact to be that Jews can actually get together in a back room and actually be together and disseminate information and, you know, essentially, you know, all of the stereotypes that are, you know, wrongly, I would say, associated with us that, you know, we control the media, we control finance, all sorts of things. And I could tell you personal stories around ways that that obviously is not true. But that all being said, you know, we started this initiative really because we had an understanding of how to activate via social media, an understanding of how to market a concept and actually get it out there into the world and penetrate slightly outside of the echo chamber.
So you're talking about, like, here's one big problem that everyone's thinking over, is one reason, but there's definitely a thousand reasons, and we need to have some centralized place to fight all those reasons. Yet you started with JewHate Database, like you started with one specific thing. So what is JewHate Database, and how did that specifically start rather than starting somewhere else?
Sure.
So basically started from a place of a lot of our haters are either saying or doing things, right? And for some reason, they think they can just, you know, get away with it, right? And be like, oh, it's just my freedom of speech. Sure. But then it gets to a place where it goes beyond freedom of speech. It becomes to inciting violence and encouraging others, right? And then they're saying, no, but I'm saying the truth, right? Everybody wants to say their truth, but it's not really the truth, right? It's more so about just hating towards another group. And they're saying, oh, but I'm not hating, right? I'm just stating my opinion. But it gets very blurry. So we came from a place of something needs to be done, and obviously others have been doing the same thing, right? But we felt like they're not doing it in the way where it really creates enough impact, right? Or they don't say it in the tone that we say it, because we're very aggressive.
So what do you do? So for people that don't know JewHate Database, you're on an elevator, like, right, 2 second pitch. Like, what is
our main tagline is to expose, right? And we want to expose individuals who are, again, saying or doing harmful things against Jews, right? Mm-hmm. So we don't dox, right? People think we dox and we are shaming them. I hate when people say name and shame, because I'm not looking to shame anyone. But at the same time, we're here to draw the line and tell them, this line you do not cross, right? This is the boundary, right? You want to say what you want to say? Go ahead and say it, but do not cross this line. This is where we decide for ourselves. Nobody decides for us, mm-hmm, right? Nobody dares to tell us what's hate against us. We will define that,
of course,
not the other side, right?
That seems like an obvious thing to say, yet, and every other group that's fighting for civil rights, that would be an obvious thing. Like, it doesn't need to be said. Why does it need to be said when it's Jews?
You want to jump in?
Double, triple, quadruple standard. I mean, all the things that I think we are all very well aware of. But I would just add to the point of, you know, JHDB, the way that started, again, right, it started as
JDB is Jewish.
A JewHate Database.
JHDB, yes.
So, you know, that began as a reactive strategy, right? So we always talk about combining reactive strategies and proactive strategies, offense and defense, right? So one doesn't work without the other to have a proper game plan, right? So, again, this began as a reactive strategy. There was hate on the streets, hate online, so on, right? So, but the intention is, and we may actually be on that point already, but we believe that there will become a tipping point that this will change into a proactive strategy and hopefully serve as a deterrence in the world at large, both online and off, for people to think twice and actually understand that, again, certain things, perhaps it is free speech, but that free speech has consequences. Are we allowed to curse here? Yeah? Okay, I always say this. It's not illegal to be an asshole, but there are consequences. So that's all. Very simple.
So, but Ben, you mentioned the word doxing.
Right.
There are people that might argue, yes, you are doxing.
So, just to
explain for people that, you know, and I'm sure a lot of people after this episode will go and look for you guys, and hopefully you'll get more and more and more a bigger audience. But you get videos, pictures of people doing really some of the most horrific things that we've been seeing. And you identify them.
Right.
You find their social media accounts. You find where they work. You find, you know, sometimes where they live. Like, you don't put out direct address, but you put, like, an area, right? Like,
an idea, right? If they're from New York or they're from L.A., of course. But
so some people might say, look, you're ruining people's lives. You're potentially ruining people's lives.
So I have an answer to that.
Yeah.
They already put themselves in that position by already saying or doing bad things, right? We don't go out of our way to put them out there. They already put themselves in the public world, right? It's in the public square, right? What we're doing is we're literally just taking publicly available information, compiling it together into one place, to one post, and distributing it, posting it, right? We're not the ones getting them fired. We're not the ones doing these things to them. We're literally just compiling all that information into one place, mm-hmm. right? If they complain about it, if they think that we're doxing, we're not doxing because we're not putting their addresses. For example, if somebody is a licensed realtor and we found out his real estate license, we make sure to redact his address, his phone number, his email. Mm-hmm. We don't want to put that information because at the end of the day, if somebody's going to see that and they're going to do something to that person, I don't want that responsibility.
Of course.
If something happens to that person, I don't want to be responsible for it. It's not my fault, right? And I don't want people to get hurt, right? But if they put themselves out there by, again, hating on another group, that's on them. If they don't want to, if they don't want to their information to be out there, then they should think twice or maybe three times the next time, right? Mm.
So what's your red line?
Private information.
Yeah.
So again, certain people, and you'll see through our posts, right? Certain people, there's a lot of information. Certain people, there's limited information. That all is based on what they put on the internet, right? And again, for us, the line is publicly available information. We do not post anything that's private, so on and so forth, right? So yeah. Person has a LinkedIn, that's social media. You posted, you know, photos, so on and so forth. That's all publicly available information, and that is our line.
What if you're very young?
Oh, so yep. Correct. 18 and over as well, 18. With regards to who we actually publish for
because
sure.
One of the
we have had instances where we've had to actually pump the brakes and, you know, not yep. expose certain individuals.
I don't agree with this viewpoint at all, but I've heard this viewpoint that, oh, many of these people spewing this hate, well, many of these people marching on the streets, they are kids. Now, I don't see them as kids. If you're 18, you can buy a gun, you can go to the military, you need to pay your taxes if your parents aren't bankrolling your tuition at Columbia. But some people would say, no, you know, they're 18, they're 19, they're not fully formed. You guys are, what, in your 30s, I assume? You know, your brain is developed. Theirs isn't. Shouldn't we have a little bit more of grace for mistakes?
Well, ultimately, again, right, to Ben's point, what we're doing is platforming the information. What happens to that individual at whatever organization or institution that they work at or attending, that's ultimately, you know, up to those bodies to decide, right? So for us, it's really a simple task. All we do, to Ben's point, is take the information, make it publicly available. We, again, are not the ones creating consequences. Mm-hmm. That is up to the community. And listen, certain cases have different outcomes. Certain cases are more triggering to folks, right? And they'll have much more of an impact. Certain ones, you know, again, it's in the, let's say, the court of public opinion, rather.
Has any of your exposures resulted in some serious outcomes?
Yeah, you can see that. Yeah, I mean, you're talking about, you know, a Malaysian pop singer who said Hitler should have killed all of us, right? Mm-hmm. Where she was basically she was signed to Warner Brothers in Malaysia, mm-hmm. and she faced the consequences, yeah. and they basically canceled her contract. Mm-hmm. Right.
In addition to Nespresso, Dior, I think she had to do with MAC Cosmetics. Forgive me if it's not them, a cosmetic company. They lost many brand deals. There have been instances with people in finance who have been fired. There have been instances with, you know, CEOs of public companies who, you know, that we have posted about and have had tremendous stock value drop, right? So again, whether it's a direct association, we can't necessarily correlate that, but again, right, we put things out, what happens?
Yeah, so for me, I mean, this seems almost obvious, right? A Malaysian pop star saying that Hitler should have finished the job, kill all the Jews, mm-hmm. probably should not have a record deal, if only so 12-year-olds won't be, you know, bopping to her songs. A financial advisor who is supposed to serve Jewish and non-Jewish clients mm-hmm. probably should be the case that they not be in a position of power. Why is this so difficult for people? Why? Because you guys do something, you know, your fight is a somewhat more controversial fight. Why aren't people, why does it rub people in such a wrong way?
You mean our opposition?
Yeah.
I mean,
we live in a culture where they think their opinion is the truth, right? Or it's the fact, right? They mix fact with opinion, mm-hmm. right? and they want to make it seem as if whatever they think, whatever they say, is the only thing. There's no other way to even see it or think about it, right?
Yeah.
It's just a different culture, right?
Yeah. We often say, you know, in this time and age that we live in, right, with so much, I would say, fluidity and non-binary concepts in, let's call it the world and zeitgeist, we live in a time where when it comes to issues, people have very binary thinking, right? So I would say, again, there are certain people who are just, you know, literally on the other side, and no matter what, they fall into that camp and they will have that reaction, right? No matter what it is we do, no matter what logic, you know, we bring forth. Again, look at what's happening to our people on a broader scale, right? Nobody believes our women. Nobody believes our victims, okay? So naturally, I mean, what reaction do we expect from these people,
yeah,
ultimately,
true.
Right? The people who, again, will not even believe people in the LGBTQ community. You know, we work with a handful of people across the world on social media. You know, we have one very strong guy named Yuval David.
Yeah, he was on the show.
Exactly. So I'm sure you saw the post that we collaborated on with him, right? I mean, the sheer disgust for anyone in any of our communities that, again, have any intersectionality with communities that oppose us, you see it. It's very binary. It's very black and white. They are going to have this reaction.
Yeah, you know what's the main problem also in our society right now? Hypocrisy. People are very hypocritical, right? They say one thing, but they do the other, mm-hmm. right? Or they pick and choose.
But let me push on that, not because I disagree with you. I completely agree with you, but because I think people listening would probably want me to do this. What if there was like some Jew hate database that was doing what you guys are doing?
You're already doing
us.
You're already doing it.
With our public information, they're people that it. Are fighting for Jewish civil rights.
They're doing it.
They're doing it.
And I don't have a problem with it. Mm-hmm. If it gets to a point where Jews are saying really horrible things, then I agree. They shouldn't be saying that as well. I'm not going to say that it's only about us.
100%.
Everybody, the whole point of this is to be able to not speak in a very vile way towards one another.
For sure.
Right? When we see certain people write, like when we expose someone and somebody from our side says something bad to them, I'm not okay with it.
Of course.
It actually upsets me, right? I don't want to see people writing messages to them, threatening them, saying, I want to rape you, or I wish you die. I don't want that. I would never do that to someone.
Sure.
I don't go out of my way to threaten someone, right? There's no point of it, right? Why we do, if they're doing it to us, why should we do it to them? It doesn't make sense, right?
Of course.
So... Yeah, I don't, again.
So it's almost like, you know, because of the situation we're in right now, you started Jew hate database, but it's just any hate database. We need to like have a database. Like if you're going to go out on the street and shout for harming any group, racist, sexist, misogynic, transphobic, whatever it is, why not have the world know who you are?
Absolutely. And again, as we move into the, you know, digital era, it's only going to further increase.
Yeah.
So what's your business model? How do you, you know, I know some stuff is proprietary, you can't really say everything, but the things that you can share, because you started off, my understanding or my view is just like two guys, hey, you know, hey, Ben, can you find this person? Hey, David, you know, I think I found this one. And then now you have like bounties, you started doing exposures on a set hour, on a day, you have like press releases. Tell me a little bit about how you started, where you're at now, how does that work?
So we started just like, you know, one would start any startup, if you will, right? You must prove concept. From there, obviously, start adding different things to make sure that the strategy is continuing to progress and continuing to be on this track to, you know, we call ourselves sort of the 0 to 60 team, if you will, right? 0 to 60, we're in the kitchen, we create the sauce, if you will. 60 to 90, we'll bring in, you know, I don't know about a Columbia grad anymore, but so on and so forth, right? The folks who can sort of scale and continue, you know, I would say evolving the project. And we would essentially just hire a CEO and scale things the same way we would with any other accelerator model, right? So that being said, obviously, once we, you know, became effective, we've had tremendous growth. We had amazing support since, day one.
Tell me numbers just so I understand what you mean by tremendous.
So, oh God, our first week, you know, and again, we've launched, I've had plenty of other ventures I've launched in my career that, you know, we were sitting there joking in a certain sense saying, okay, we'll have 500,000 followers by the end of the week. Let's give it a shot. We had 17,000 by the end of the week, right? So, and again,
within a week.
And that was support from a handful of, you know, big accounts. A dear friend of ours, a journalist, Stella Escobedo, Michael Rappaport was very early to support and share all of our content as well. So, you know, I think, again, what resonated.
What do you have now? How many followers do you have?
Almost 94.
Yeah. 94,000. And this is just on Instagram?
Just on Instagram?
Yeah. Within 8 months. Yeah, 8 months.
Yeah, on Twitter, I forget our numbers.
Seven.
But again, right, so that, I would say, the support from the Jewish world, and I would say specifically, you know, again, to Ben's point previously, there are other folks, you know, participating in the same arena, right, exposing people, identifying information, and putting it out. For us, though, the difference is, I think, A, the way we communicate, our, you know, sort of brand voice style, aesthetic, if you will, and then, you know, really beyond that, it was about actually creating actionable data, right, beyond just exposing people, right? So for us, there are other initiatives that we're building out, educational initiatives, because for us, again, we truly do believe in a path to redemption as well,
yeah.
Right? So for folks who hopefully do see the light, we're always going to offer a way for them to change their status on the actual database as well, right? So there are other things that, you know, we believe are missing from, let's call it that space, right, of the, I hate calling it, we're not going to use name and shame, the exposing world, let's say, right? So, you know, for us, I think we're taking it a few steps further than some of the other groups. And, you know, for whatever reason, the market
is. I do want to hear about, you know, what's next. But before we get to what's next,
sure.
I do want to get a little bit more into how you do what you do. Because one thing that struck me as shocking is, yesterday I saw the NYPD had a wanted sign for the guy who shouted on the subway, "Are there any Zionists here? This is your last chance to leave," right? And it's and I looked at the wanted, what we're wanted for. Pretty scary. There's no name. They don't know who they're looking for, any tips. And I was like, how is this possible? I already know who this guy is because Jew Hate Database told me who this guy is. How is it possible that your group of two, do you have any other?
No, we have a team. We have a whole team.
A team,
yeah.
Of, you know, but a small team, 20 people of your group already know someone, you know exactly. You have pictures of this person in many different situations, things that he said. NYPD, with, you know, all our taxes, with everything, they have no idea who this person is. How is this possible?
Part of it is because most of these guys are familiar to us. Right, because they go.
But they must be familiar to the.
Yeah, because they go to all these protests, and we keep seeing these videos. Right, we know them. Like we already like. I look at this guy. I'm like, I've seen him somewhere. He looks very familiar. Then I start working my brain, and I'm like, okay, let me look into that. And that's how we go from one end to another, from one clue to another, and we're able to find these guys. Right, for example, him. You know, with our team, right, we're able to really go down into a rabbit hole and figure out exactly who he is. And what else can we find out about him, right? But listen, with all due respect to NYPD, you know they do an amazing job, but you would think that they would be able to get on top of this like this, right? Because it doesn't take us. Sometimes it takes us a while, right? But sometimes it doesn't, right? Sometimes we are able to just like find them right away. You would think that they would work smart, right? Yeah. I was always raised by work smart, not hard, right? But it seems like they don't, right?
So you think that if the NYPD tomorrow decided, you know what, we're going to get on top of this. We don't like it where there's Cannery Mission, Stop Anti-Semitism, and Jew Hate Database doing this. We're going to get in front of the game. Do you think they could do it?
Of course. There's so much great talent out there. They could literally put a task force together, right? There's a lot of these young guys who know what they're doing, right? And mind you, we know that because they're coming to us, right? When we issue a bounty, these guys out there message us saying, oh, I found this clue, I found that clue. There's a lot of talent out there. They could put this shit together fast, mm-hmm. But they don't. So something's going on behind the scenes that maybe they don't care enough. I don't know, I'm not going to presume.
Have other priorities.
Yeah, it's right? A bureaucracy. It's a combination of all of the above, right? I think you see when you light a proper fire under people's behinds, they move a little quicker. So, you know, that is, again, part of the work that we do on a daily basis to demand action, right? So, again, we've worked with, you know, various law enforcement a handful of times. And in a certain sense, while it's flattering for us, you know, we've been told multiple times, thank you. By the time the case gets to our desk, you guys have already done all the casework, right? So in a certain sense,
you got all the evidence.
You're like Johnny Walker at Texas Ranger. You know, you're like, you bring them in, but then you're not the ones to book them.
Right. So from that perspective, though, again, they of course have more resources than us, right? They of course have, you know, more bandwidth and distribution to get information out there, right?
But we're missing one thing, and you know what that is.
Yeah.
Passion.
Started with. Exactly,
that's
the passion.
We're missing. We're not passionate about saving Jews. Or, you know.
I mean, yeah. And again, the bureaucratic process, you know, I can't tell you how many times we've tried to interact and you get put on a hold and people, one hand doesn't know what the other hand is doing. And, you know, and again, listen, it's tough. It is tough. Bureaucracy is tough across the world. We understand that. But again, we are here to activate people, raise awareness, to, you know, increase that pressure. So, you know, the state and the city and all the bodies that, you know, we still pay tax dollars for that we rely on, you know, actually show up for us. And if they cannot, we are here to, again, serve and protect our people. We are going to continue to create initiatives that solve our issues, right, in all of the gaps that exist.
So, and, you know, while you're exposing people, you also, I assume, get exposed to the worst of it, right? You probably see the worst videos, the worst posts. That must take a toll.
Yeah, like psychologically, spiritually, mentally.
Emotionally.
Yeah, I mean, we sort of like, for the past 8 months, you know, looking at the screenshots, looking at what people say and send to one another, right? All these literally vile things, right? You're like at this point right now, it doesn't shock me,
yeah,
right? Only certain times.
Does anything, you know, things that might not shock you will probably shock me and very likely shock people listening. And do you have examples of something that comes to mind that was, this was...
You look like you like to enjoy getting raped. You know, all kinds of things. Obviously, put you in the ovens.
Or even saying, you know, I would take I'm gonna take the tefillin and wrap it around your neck, mm-hmm. right? Like stuff like that. Like literally, there was one guy. His name was Cheyan, right? He literally was spamming everyone, a bunch of accounts. And was really saying horrible things. And then when we started looking into him, the guy was arrested before. He was in jail. So you already understand exactly who you're dealing with and why he's saying these things, right? So, yeah, I mean, we've consumed a lot of this type of content. Mm-hmm. And look, it definitely affects us. But I think that we have a very strong will and a very strong sort of, you know, energy to not let it affect us, right? I mean, the good thing, I keep Shabbat, so it definitely helps me to take that break within the week and, you know, just like disconnect from everything.
What about you, David?
I mean, obviously, it's very, very heavy. In the beginning, you know, I would say it was heavier for sure, but we've definitely become a bit desensitized as horrible as that is. You know, sometimes now, like, it's like hearing but not listening, right? Mm-hmm. Same thing. So I see it, but... You know, I sort of process it in the back of my mind and, you know, react, and we just take action.
It's kind of like what we had to do when we all saw the footage from October 7th. Like, at first it shocked us, and we were like, you know what, I need to see it, but I'm not going to put that inside my
internalize
soul.
Internalize it, yeah.
Do you ever get messaged from people that you exposed?
I'll let you handle this one.
From people that we exposed?
Of course.
I mean, in terms of...
Do they reach out to you? Do they say
certain
things?
People have.
Yeah, some.
What's their... You know, I'm assuming they're trying to justify or defend themselves. What are they...
Sometimes. I mean, no. So there are a lot of times that where they bullshit us. They say, oh, my account was hacked.
Of course.
You know, you have 200 followers. Yeah, your account was hacked and someone was sitting on it and writing all these messages. Come on.
Yeah. Making stories.
Yeah.
Somebody hacked some nondescript random person just to... you know, set them up.
Say bad things about Jews, right? And you're not going to do about it, right? You're going to let it roll for a whole month, right? Your account is hacked? Yeah, my account is hacked. So what? Like, come on. Or sometimes they went hard with it, right? People were exposed. They kept sending bad messages. They kept sending all these vile things.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Double, triple down on
and,
it.
And now, we you know, look, we love trolling these guys, right? We don't take it serious, right? We have fun with it, right? If they want to say all these things, sure, we'll play with them a little, right? Because that's exactly what they want. Sure, we're not gonna, let it get to us, right? So yeah, I mean, a lot of them reached out to us. But listen, a lot of them also reached out to us, apologizing, absolutely, saying I messed up.
Really?
I messed absolutely up. Yeah, they said, you know what? I realized that I after you guys posted my video, I went to speak with other people, with a lot of Jews, and I realized I made a mistake, right?
How do you deal with these people? How do we give them a way back?
Right. So that's part of another initiative that we're putting together, our education initiative, right? Going through a course of specifically talking about hate towards Jews throughout time, not just the Holocaust, and just explaining exactly how, you know, how bad it is and how we shouldn't be continuing that, right? So it's a whole course they're going to have to go through, and hopefully it's going to help beyond then just apologizing.
And is the idea that people that were exposed will go through this training and then will get some sort of like official recognition of...
On the platform itself, which is in development, their status will change, right? They will go, for example, from foe to friend, right? Mm-hmm. Something like that. So the profile will remain, so on and so forth. But again, as far as who they are and how, let's say, the Jewish community should look at this person, that will be reflected. Yeah. And again, to the point that we made earlier, right? We do believe in a path to redemption, right? So again, and you're in academia, right? I always say this, and you touched on this point earlier, where it's like, you know, these kids, do they know what they're saying? Do they not? But in a certain sense, right? Imagine, I just try to imagine, I had nothing to do with the Jewish world. I come from the Midwest somewhere. My parents work their entire lives, send me to a great university. I show up, I look at, you know, professor, you know, number one, as a demigod almost, all the things he's telling me, right? So from there, they're receiving this information. And, you know, I fundamentally do believe that most people are altruistic. Most people, you know, do what they believe is right, right? That's the driving force for any human. So the question is, where are we in this information game, right? That's why we believe there's so much more work to be done than just Jew-Hate Database. But
so, okay, but you know, here's something that occurs to me throughout our conversation. If you ask people that have seen your Jew-Hate Database, your project, and people that have maybe have met you a couple of times, just for people listening in, like you both are, like wearing black t-shirts, you know, jeans, or you got trainers on, David, black baseball hats, you know, you're kind of like, your persona is the bad boys of like the, you know, we're here to get things in order. We're the bad boys in the Jewish world. Bad not being like nonviolent, but bad like we're here to mess things up. But then that's not at all how you talk. That's not at all.
We can get there.
What's this gap between how people think of you or imagine that you are and what you actually are?
I'm very respectful towards everybody. I'm very nice to everybody. But I think that once you get me to the point where you're really going against me, you know, I'm not gonna stay respectful. I'm gonna try my best, but I can't at that point, right? And that's where I draw the line. I draw the line towards everybody, right? Even my friends.
Why do you? Where's that coming from?
I don't know. Maybe I was born that way.
But you guys have been working on this for just a few months. You know, David, you said that you see yourself a Jewish and now like a big Jew. It seems like you're drawing from something for this fight.
I think it's the way we grew up. It's the culture that we come from. It's in the back of our mind, knowing about these things all of our lives. Mm-hmm. Right, our parents, our grandparents reminding us about this.
Tell me,
right?
What were they telling you? Like, you know, what did you grow up with?
Listen, my mom grew up in an environment where, you know, in the East, where majority were Muslims, right?
Your mom was a Bukhari Jew?
Yeah. Yeah. Right? So even when she was 12, 13, a bunch of guys, whatever, punched her, right? Because she was a Jew, right? You would think, even over there, right? Nothing to do with Israel, right? But literally no mention of that because she was a Jew, punched a girl, a bunch of boys punched her, right? So it's knowing these things and growing up with it, right? And with that environment in that culture that you understand that you can't just, you can never feel comfortable, right? As much as you want to, you can't, right? Because you know that the world will always turn against us, right? And some people don't see it. Some people think like, oh no, it's just, it's a wave of hate against us. No, it's not a wave. So it always existed, right? We just try to ignore it, right? Because we want to become like the world.
What would you give, Ben, to expose the boys that punched your mom?
Say it again?
What would you give to expose the boys that punched your mom?
Oh, a lot. I would do anything. Yeah. Sure. I mean, who wants his parents, his mom, right, to get hurt or somebody to attack, right?
And this is where it's different because back then,
yeah,
no one was documented.
Oh, of course.
Exactly.
Of course.
It was just stories and
yeah.
People would tell us you're overreacting, you're exaggerating, did it really happen? There was a lot of gaslighting.
Or they wouldn't even talk about it. They would be like, look, keep your mouth shut.
Tree falls in the forest.
Yeah.
100 didn't make a sound.
Yeah.
But you know, I'll add to the previous question as well. I think, let's say the gap between our perception and who we are. Listen, most people and every, organization has a personality in a certain sense, right? And ultimately, there are different versions of who we are to different people. And, you know, listen, we're capable of that version. There are also much more diplomatic versions of us and, yeah. Much more culturally understanding versions of us. But again, right? So I'll say, at least from my own perspective, back to the point you just made about me being Jewish, to a big Jew in a certain sense, and to Ben's point, you know, listen, I grew up, I'm a Georgian Jew. I grew up definitely feeling always very, very close to, you know, who I am, my Judaism, my lineage. My grandfather was very involved in, you know, early part of the establishment of the State of Israel, specifically for Georgian Jews. And I also have experienced, I would say, direct hate. Listen, I was spit on as a child for walking with a kippah. Yeah, a dirty Jew. And actually, I know the guy still lives in the neighborhood I grew up in. I've worked previously. I used to work often in the Middle East. You know, I've been told plenty of times, you know, well, David, maybe you don't say you are Jewish for this meeting. Mm-hmm. I said, oh, interesting. Okay, very good. And listen, I've lived my life in circles where, you know, people are shocked that I'm a Jew. So I've heard a lot of things. Yeah, I've heard a lot of things, you know, from all sides, left, right, center. And I'll tell you one thing. Ultimately, it's all the same. It's all the same hate. It's all the same, you know, morphing of different reasons to, you know, point a finger at our group of people.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting in what you guys are touching on, which is people have a view of the Jew as either a very, you know, subservient, you know, just all about morals and ethics and do everything right and treat everyone, you know, nice and respectful, which is an important thing. Or this demonizing of the Jew or the Israeli Jew is like this killing machine, blah, 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 you know, fighting. And the truth is, we have everything. We're like,
yeah.
we're not just one or the other, just like any exactly. other group. We fight back and we're not pulling punches when punches shouldn't be pulled.
50 shades.
But yeah, but we're also doing the other stuff. So you have Jew Hate Database, you have your education initiative. What else is in the works?
Oh, man, what can we speak about here? I'm not sure. A lot of things. I'll just say we have a 20-year strategy at a minimum.
I thought anti-Semitism, we're solving it in the next 2-3 years.
Well, it's a fun point. It's funny. Everybody thinks, silver bullet, right?
Yeah.
It exists. Exactly.
Right.
So heavy emphasis on media, heavy emphasis on storytelling, heavy emphasis on security.
Supporting Jews,
activism. So essentially, we think through things within pillars, and we build out strategies that basically fit within one of those pillars, right? So for us, again, media, education, activism, security. Those are, I would say, the things that we care about the most. Okay, so within that, there, I would just say, be ready for hopefully next semester when, you know, you face an issue where, for example, your key card is deactivated. We plan to have people there on the ground across the country to begin to take care of folks like us, like yourself, like the ambassadors who visit the country, and your everyday, you know, regular juice. So we're in the process of setting up rapid response teams. We're in the process of, you know, again, creating a central command, making Jews feel more confident, introducing self-defense, so on and so forth. So that's something that we plan to launch over the next few months, hopefully to have it ready by the time school is back in session next fall.
Where do you draw the line between Jewish people defending themselves and the Jewish community defending itself to the Jewish community and Jewish people going on the attack?
So again, I don't think we should ever be on the attack, right? I think for us, it's about showing force and serving as protection, right? What do we say? We want
to serve. But let me push you on that, because serving as protection, right? People might say, well, if you're going to walk around Jews, you know, there to protect ambassadors coming, to protect students on the street, a lot of Jews are now, you know, I personally disagree with, but are buying guns. Mm-hmm. Are you not worried that at some point that protection becomes aggression?
So I don't even think we need to get there, right? Because throughout my life, I mean, grew up in New York, right? It's the energy and the tone of a Jew that needs to change, where someone is going to think twice before even trying to do anything to you. Right, it's they could just smell it off of you and be like, I don't want to fuck with this guy, right? Because I know if I even try, something is about to go down, right? So that's what we we're trying to change the mentality of a Jew to give off that instinct to someone that no one's even gonna want to bother him, right? And if they will, they're gonna be able to learn self defense, right? And deal with that person, right? Nobody wants to attack anyone, but if someone is being attacked, they're gonna know how to defend themselves, right?
Some people might say that the mentality that you refer to, the diaspora mentality, is it's been 2,000 years in the making.
Yeah. Perhaps so. We speak about that often.
Why do you think that even 20 years like would not be enough to
change
that mentality?
So yes, it's a huge undertaking. Okay, what I will say though is what we have on our side in today's world is this thing, okay?
Your phone, yeah.
Right, so I would say the transfer of ideology globally has never been stickier, right? I look at certain concepts, certain ideas that have caught fire throughout the world, all because of this. So I would say we have that on our side. And again, like, look at trends, right?
So that's where you're tying everything to the media and... Yeah.
Definitely, right? And I think we need to approach this as a trend in a certain sense, right? Okay, for example, whatever. I mean, whether it's a fashion trend, a trend on, you know, how people behave in society, it's about changing the mentality. And I do think that, you know, again, if we start dropping in slightly different examples of what it is to be a Jew, right? Yeah. And again, there is no one example, right? But again, slowly to start introducing slightly different examples of, you know, how can a Jew behave? We get told often, oh, that's not how Jews behave.
Yeah.
Respectfully, I am a Jew, just like you. If I behave this way, this is how Jews behave. Yeah.
Yeah, I've been telling people, a lot of people that agree with what I've been doing and saying, but they don't like my style. And I told him, use your own style, man. You know, like, you know, I'd rather there be two Jews or three Jews or 1,000 Jews talking than one Jew.
Yeah, I also have an issue because people were telling us that all the time. And for some reason, certain Jews think that just because their culture is based on that, they think it's supposed to be for every Jew, right? It's supposed to be the way Jews behave, right? The way Jews act, right? Jews come from the East also. They have been living in a different way, right? They have developed their own way of protecting themselves, defending themselves, whatever it is, right? Just because you came from the West or wherever you came from doesn't mean it has to be the same way.
And even in the West, you know, like I had a group of students at Columbia from Belgium, And when shit hit the fan at Columbia, they started a WhatsApp group called Hashomrim, the Guardians, which they based on groups that they already have in Brussels, they have it in Paris. Basically, you want to walk from point A to point B, and you're worried. They just text someone, hey, someone want to walk with me? Like that, you know, so Jews have always been finding ways to protect themselves. You just seem to be like doing it in a more larger scale. You have bigger dreams.
Yeah. I think it also comes from a place of tapping into the younger culture, right? Because obviously culture changes every generation, right? So a lot of the ways that Jews have been going on about, it's the old tactics. It doesn't fit in today's culture. So we're kind of tapping into that younger culture, and we have a lot of people who see it the same way, right? Where the older generation don't agree with it, but that's fine, right? They could still do it their way, but we're going to do it our way.
So let's talk about this younger culture, because, you know, for a lot of, let's say, late teens, early 20 guys, would probably like relate more to what you guys are doing than what I'm doing, which is completely acceptable and fine. And since this is all about how do we engage more people, Jews and non-Jews, in the fight for Jewish civil rights, so what advice would you have for these young guys? You know, what should they be focusing on in terms of skills, in terms of activities? If they're going to college, what should they be focusing on? If they're not going to college, like how do they get involved?
I mean, I think there are a few issues that need to be handled simultaneously. A, it's a both a mental war and a physical war in a certain sense, right? So I think culturally, absolutely, to a great point. But what I would say is, again, right, learn to debate. First of all, people do not know who they are. And I'll speak specifically for, you know, U.S. Jews. Most of the people that we speak to don't know history further than the Holocaust, okay? That's one thing. Learn who you are. Understand your history. Work on debate, okay? Truly, truly work on debate. Be physically fit. Learn how to defend yourself. Create groups within your community, similar to what you're saying happened at Columbia. Make sure that you know at least 5 to 10 other Jews within your neighborhood that you can walk to, right? If you can't walk to, if you live in suburbia and it's a, you know, 10-minute drive, the equivalent of a 10-minute, you know, connection, right? I would say start forming those groups. From there, I would say wait for us in the fall. We'll give you further instructions, but I would say those would be the first things to do that anyone can do anywhere in the world. Know who you are, know how to defend yourself from, again, from an ideological place and from a physical place, and make sure that you're, you know, creating community that can help each other.
But let's say I want to be like you guys, like Ben and David. Like, where did you guys come from? Like, you know, you obviously have a lot of business acumen, you have a lot of cyber knowledge. Like, what actual skills do you guys have that brought you here?
I mean, where God put us in the world, the journey that He put us through made us learn a lot of skill sets, you know, not just one, but plenty of them.
Sure.
And yeah, we've throughout our history, we've been involved with different things, right? Always keeping ourselves busy, right? Never sticking to one thing, right? And doing multiple things at the same time. And eventually you gain a good amount of skills and experience to be able to utilize it for other things in your life, right? And that's where we come from, right?
David, what do you think?
I mean, similarly, you know, for obvious reasons, not to get too specific with backgrounds, but, you know, look, I've been involved in entertainment, I've been involved in finance, I've been involved in hospitality, I've been involved in emerging markets, I've been around a few blocks, and to Ben's point, a lot of things that I would say in the rear view prior to this initiative beginning seemed a bit scattered and unrelated somehow are all basically falling right in our laps and providing value that, again, didn't, you know, you'll go through certain experiences in life and say, okay, what the hell is this going to serve me? Am I going to actually ever need to use this? But I will say that there's always a plan. Somehow things always work out. And that's for anybody listening today as well. And life is short, but life is long. You can't rush discovery. So just, you know, appreciate all the little skill sets that you pick up along the way, because they will serve to be useful. But look, for us, you know, I would say both Ben and I are very skilled, I would say, in branding, communication. You know, I would say those would be the biggest driving factors with regards to, you know, and obviously the work product. Most importantly, the work speaks for itself, right? So from there, you know, again, what's the kicker? What made us go a little further than other groups? I would assume it's those.
But just that really, I think it's the motivation that kind of made us realize. I mean, for me personally, my motivation was realizing that the other organizations are not doing enough, right?
For sure.
They're stuck in their ways, and it's always having that opinion and talking between each other in our group chats and like what else can be done, and then realizing we can talk about it all the time, like talk about it, but if we don't do it, nothing's gonna change. So that was our motivator to say, you know what,
sure,
talk less, do more.
Yeah.
And throughout our what we've been doing, it's just doing.
100%. Which I 100% agree with you. I could have called this podcast Talk Less, Do More. And I understand the irony of me doing a podcast where all you do is talk.
People love talking. Yeah. They're just like, oh, there's
But you're right. We need more action.
Yeah.
Let me just jump to another question. Because you're talking a lot about education, about knowing who you are, knowing history, do you have any recommendations, book, movies, plays, for people who want to learn more about Israel, about Jews, about the fight for Jewish civil rights, about?
I mean, I would say the Torah.
Which book?
Tanakh, all of it. I mean,
all of it?
I mean, in a certain sense, right? I feel, and again, not trying to push spirituality on people anything like that. But ultimately, listen, you know, I think that is where people should start if they honestly want to know, you know, the beginnings of it and how we ended up here and the roots that carried us for 2,000 years plus in exile, right? A lot of people don't even know we're in exile, right? So I would say perhaps if they want a shortened version, and forgive me, I don't have a book off the top of my mind, we'll come back to it and drop it in the link. We'll come up with recommended books here. But at the end of the day, I would say really studying exile, I think, would be very important for a lot of Jews, right? Because again, speak to your random person. Oh, they're shocked that we come from Israel, right? So I think just talking about exile and the persecution throughout that time should hopefully serve as a good enough lens to make people understand how this shape-shifting phenomenon that we fight against, b'chol dor v'dor, and every generation, you know, changes, and where the people on both sides fit, right, and who the archetypes are in each generation.
Yeah, it's nothing's new, so we got to learn from the past so we can fight better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, so I like ending every episode with what I call a Jewish lightning round.
Okay.
List of questions. List of questions that just whatever comes from the top of your head, no wrong answers. Just honesty is the most important thing, and you each get one pass.
Okay.
All right, so, and just shout out your answer. What is one thing people don't know about you?
First.
I don't know.
For you guys, it's complicated because a lot of things. People
everything.
Don't know about you.
No, just
it's on purpose, but yeah.
One thing they don't know about me. Yeah, it's a hard question. You go first. I'll think about it.
I'm funny as fuck.
Yeah, I'll say that I'm.
I love his answer. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, you are. No, I mean, especially
when you get to know me, it's one of those. A lot of people, I think, who know me personally, think I'm very serious and so on and so forth. But I'm goofy with my nearest and dearest.
All right, Ben.
Yeah. I'll say also, like, I mean, I could be very serious, but I could be also very goofy, and I could be very playful, you know.
What is one thing people don't know about the Jews?
They don't know about the Jews. A lot.
How resilient we are.
Yeah.
What is your favorite curse?
My favorite curse? I mean, moron. I mean, I don't know if it's a curse, but...
Curse.
You know?
I'm Georgian. Can I do it in Georgian? Shani dadam otkan.
Wait, can you say it like, but when you're angry?
That is angry. That's
you angry?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the camera may break if I
don't know. What does it mean?
I can't say it in English. It's bad.
It's okay.
It means F your mother.
Oh, okay.
But it's very vulgar.
Say that, Shenny. Let's do it. Shenny.
Georgians are not going to be proud of this.
Shenny
deda.
Shenny deda.
Moftran.
Shenny deda motran.
Moftran.
Moftran. All right. When was the last time you cried?
I cry every day. No, I'm kidding. October 7th. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Really, really got me there.
Yeah. I actually didn't cry on October 7th. But definitely, I would say in the very beginning to the previous question you asked, when, you know, some of the messages that we were starting to receive when we first started this, you know, and again, I'm not a wear my, you know, heart on my sleeve kind of person, but definitely teared up a few times because, again, you see these messages that, you know, these are our brothers, our sisters, our mothers, our fathers that are receiving these messages everywhere, and it's just an extension of us, right? So it feels like you're getting it. I would say that probably sometime in November, you know, late October. Yeah.
If you could have any person over for Shabbat dinner from any moment in history, who would that be?
King David.
King David, why?
I think he's the inspiration, and I think the symbol of everything that we are. I think he's the symbol of Jewish resilience, a light into the strategies that we must always take upon ourselves to not only survive, but to thrive. I think he represented, you know, a person who was spiritually connected, a person who was honest, and takes accountability for his mistakes. I think he was strong, and most importantly, he was able to actually unite the Jewish people, right? So at the end of the day, I think that's something that is hugely missing in our community. And you know, while, again, everyone gets criticism and so on, the spirit of everything that we do is to bring Jews together. And I would just say the most inspiring character to me. Obviously, my name is David as well. So I would be lying if there was no certain, you know, bias. But again, I think, you know, the symbol that David HaMelech left behind, the Star of David, obviously it represents us. I think he is, you know, one of the quintessential characters.
Ben, who do you have over Shabbat?
I would say Menachem Begin. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he amplified that strong Jew vibes, right? As never backing down and not, you know, and when something had to be said to someone, he would say it, right? He wouldn't feel, you know, scared, feared, ashamed, nothing. He would tell them straight to their face. It's kind of an example of myself because I'm very straightforward with people, right? I don't beat around the bush, right? If I have to tell you something, even if I love you or respect you, I'll tell you, right? So I don't hide things, and I feel like he's like one of those people, and I would love to just sit down with him and really like learn more from that.
That's great. That's a great answer. What's your favorite Jewish holiday?
Pesach.
Yeah, I'll say the same.
What's your least favorite Jewish holiday?
Yom Kippur.
It's funny. It actually has started to turn into one of my more favorite ones. My least favorite Jewish holiday, I mean, I don't remember my Brit Milah, but I was probably just... No, I'm just kidding. No. Sukkot, depending on the weather.
Yeah, okay.
Sukkot, depending on the weather, is my answer.
I like the Brit Milah. I'll accept that. I'll ask my judges, and the judges agree.
No, but that's the greatest mitzvah also. So actually, no, I take that one back, Sukkot.
Okay. When do you feel safest?
When do I feel safest? When I have my people around me, right? When I know that they're around me, we're in a group, we're all together, that's when I feel the safest. Mm.
So when do you feel least safe?
Alone, right?
For me, that's a natural response. I would, I guess, go one level deeper, which is when I'm with my family. Mm.
What gives you hope?
God.
Yeah, I would say belief.
And you said you're not spiritual, David.
I am. I don't try to push it on other people at all, though, right? And I think you lose a lot of people when you begin there. But yeah, definitely. I would say, you know, a lot of the work that, you know, at least I'll speak for Ben and I, up until now, it's almost magical the way things have been happening. Yeah. And again, I'm a guy who I've started many things in my life. Some have been successful, some have been not successful. And when it's right and it clicks a certain way, that means you're doing things correctly, right? It's the whole what is it, Paulo Coelho quote, when whatever the universe conspires to, so on, basically.
All right.
Get you further in your path.
See, you did end up bringing another book in.
Yeah, you see, exactly. Yeah.
Finally, every episode, I urge the listeners to donate to one charity that does good in Israel or across the Jewish diaspora. Where would you want people to donate to this week?
Outside of ourselves, obviously. My God, there's so many organizations that do such great work.
Yeah.
We were with a dear friend of ours, Michael, last night, actually, who I believe you met at Blue Stripes as well. Who runs Israel Friends. Mm-hmm. They've done amazing work sending, resources to IDF Miluim, reserve soldiers. So I would say definitely look up Israel Friends.
And we'll add everything in the link as well.
For sure. I would say if I had to choose one.
Franklin. Yeah, I mean, Bulletproof Israel also.
Bulletproof Israel, of course, our friend Remy Franklin.
Yeah. And they, what do Bulletproof Israel do?
They also, they basically fund all the reservists and all the equipment and stuff to the soldiers.
So where can people find you?
Instagram at JewHateDB.
Or our website, JewHateDB.org. Either or. Or on Twitter, same username.
There are many, many different ways of fighting for Jewish civil rights. And let me just say that I am glad that you guys are on our side and not the other side. I feel like you're going to be doing a lot of amazing stuff, and I want you to come back when your next initiative launches, and we'll talk about that. So Here I am with Ben and David from Jew Hate Database.
Thank you for having us.
Hi, I'm Michael Greenspan, Shai's father-in-law. I'd like to thank you for listening to the Here I Am podcast with Shai Davidai. Here I Am is recorded at The Cave Production House in Hackensack, New Jersey, and is brought to you in partnership with Abby Sophia and Adamit Productions. You can find us on Instagram, YouTube, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts. I'd also like to extend my deepest gratitude to everyone at Adamit Productions for turning Shai's dream into a reality, and to all our donors and partners for their unwavering commitment to fighting for Jewish civil rights. Most importantly, I'd like to thank you, our listeners. Let's be honest, none of this would have been possible without your support and dedication. Showing up is half the battle. Thank you for showing up. Thank you for being there. Thank you for saying, "Here I am."